everybody. I don't know how many of you heard my drasha last Friday night, so I'm going to plagiarize a little bit. I'm going to copy myself, but I'm going to add something. I want to be sure, first of all, this may be obvious to you all, but I'm going to say it anyway. Be sure that everybody understands the chronology of Avraham's life. According to Chazal, according to the Torah, Avraham Avinu was 75 when Hashem appears to him, and Hashem says, "Go to the land that I'm going to show you." Which means to say, we know nothing about Avraham for the first 75 years of his life. However, in the Parsha, in Lech Lecha, we have the covenant of the parts, right? After Avraham defeats the four kings, so Avraham is afraid that perhaps he's getting his reward in this world and will not have the eternity of children and the like. So there's a special covenant Hashem makes in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises him the land and promises the land to his descendants, but says, your seed will be enslaved in a land that is not theirs, and they will be oppressed and persecuted for 400 years, and the nation that enslaves them I will judge, I will punish, and then your people will go out with great wealth, right? You know, that's a famous pasuk. Now, the Mefarshim all ask the kasha, actually Chazal asked it earlier, that Hashem is telling Avraham that your children will be enslaved in a land that is not theirs for 400 years, but we know that from the time Yaakov came to Mitzrayim till the time that Yaakov was taken out is only 210 years. So there's 190 years short of the 400 years. So there are many, many answers that Chazal and the Mefarshim give to the question. One answer is, Hashem in his mercy took off 190 years because the Jewish people were assimilating. They were in the 49th level of impurity. If they would have stayed another minute, they would have hit level 50 and been irredeemable. So Hashem had to take them out after 210 years. He couldn't have waited the other 190, which means we should have been there 400, we were only there 210. Now that sounds like a good deal, but in reality it's not so good, because the Chiddushei Harim writes, the first Sefer Rebbe writes, that had we been able to survive Mitzrayim for 400 years, our souls would have been perfected, and there would not have been the need for Golos and Chorban, and the Mashiach would have come as soon as we came to Eretz Yisrael. That would have been it. But since we were not able to survive the last 190 years, there were imperfections in our neshama that necessitated golus. Now think about that. Chas v'shalom, cancer is a perfect analogy. When a person has cancer, they sometimes need very strong doses of chemotherapy. But the chemotherapy can be so powerful that it kills you. If it kills you, it has to be discontinued. But if it's discontinued, there may be some cancer cells that will continue to grow. So if only we could have... So the idea is that the imperfections in our soul were like cancer. Mitzrayim was the chemotherapy. But the chemotherapy was so powerful that we would have died. As a result, the chemotherapy had to be truncated earlier than was necessary. But the net result is that cancer flourished and grew and became thousands of years of gullus. So think about this. It's compound interest. We are suffering thousands of years of gullus because we could not remain in Mitzrayim another 190 years. Now that's one approach. The approach that Rashi takes is different. Rashi takes the approach that Hashem didn't say they would be in Mitzrayim 400 years. He said, your children will be persecuted in a land that is not theirs for a total of 400 years. So Rashi says, we count it from the birth of Yitzchak, because that's Avraham's child. And although Yitzchak never left Eretz Yisrael, he never left Eretz Yisrael at all, but he was persecuted, right? The Pelishtim filled up his wells. There was a persecution in a land that is not his. So from the birth of Yitzchak to Yitzias Mitzrayim is 400 years. Okay, so 210 years from Yaakov coming to Mitzrayim till we left, 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak. Now, there is a third number, And that is in Parshas Bo, it says the Jewish people's exile in Egypt was 430 years. So we have three numbers to work with. We have 210, we have 400, we have 430. The 210 are the actual years we spent in Egypt. And by the way, we weren't slaves that whole time. I mean, during Yaakov's life we weren't slaves, so, but it was 210 from the time we came to Mitzrayim till the time we left. It was 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak. So what's the 430? The 430 is 430 years from the time of the covenant of the parts, when Hashem told Avraham there would be this slavery. So if you think about this, you're going to have a real problem. That means the following. From the Bris Ben Absarim to Yetzias Mitzrayim is 430 years. From the birth of Yitzchak to Yetzias Mitzrayim is 400 years. That means the Bris Ben Absarim took place 30 years before the birth of Yitzchak. Right? Everyone has that? 30 years before the birth of Yitzchak. Now, how old was Abraham when Yitzchak was born? 100 years old. So 30 years before the birth of Yitzchak, Abraham would be 70 years old. So how old was Abraham at the covenant of the parts? 70. But how could that be? The Chumash says he didn't even come to Eretz Yisrael till he was 75. But we can prove from the Bris Ben Absarim that that happened when he was 70. Right? Chronological problem. So Ramban explains that when Hashem comes to Avram at 75 and says, go to the land of Israel, or go to the land I will show you, this was not Avram's first trip. Avram had made a trip to Eretz Yisrael on his own that is otherwise not recorded in the Torah, because he was attracted like a magnet to the Kedusha. And then Hashem told him, it's not time yet, go back. But in that first trip, that is when the covenant of the parts took place. This is a classic example of the principle of Chazal, Ein muktam u'me'ucher b'Torah. The Torah's events are not always chronological, and the Bris Ben Absarim is before Lech Lecha. 5 years before the Lech Lecha is the covenant of the parts. And that first trip was on his own. Again, somehow he intuited, it's hard for us to understand that idea, but he somehow felt this was the land of God. But God said, you still have your mission in Chutz La'aretz. Go back to Chutz La'aretz, spread godliness there, and I will get back to you when it's time to go. And that was 5 years later in Lech Lecha. Right? So you see the proof that the Bris Ben Absarim occurred 5 years before Lech Lecha, because that's how you get the 430 years from the Bris Ben Absarim to the Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, so Avram's first, now we don't know how long that first trip was. I mean, maybe he came to Eretz Yisrael when he was 50. I mean, the only thing we can prove is that when he was 70, he had a bris with Hashem in Eretz Yisrael. But how many years before then did he come? You know, that we don't know. We do know that at 75, he was back, right? So all we know is he was in Eretz Yisrael at 70, and he was in Chutz La'aretz at 75, and Hashem told him, go back to Eretz Yisrael, but we're not sure how early he came the first trip and how late he left after. Okay, all right. But be it as it may, here you get a little confusing. Although the covenant of the parts is called a bris, Bris Bein Habisarim, the covenant between the flesh, between the cut animals, that was not bris milah. Hashem made a promise to him, but there was no circumcision yet. The bris milah does not occur until Avram is 99 years old. So remember, the Bris Ben Absarim, he was 70, and then 75 was God's command to come to Eretz Yisrael, or come to the land that I will show you. And Avram lived in Eretz Yisrael from 75 to 99. He was not given the commandments of Bris Milah. Now, when was Yishmael born? Yishmael was born when Avraham was 86. Okay, 75 is Lech Lecha. 10 years after he came to Eretz Yisrael, he took the concubine Hagar from Mitzrayim. He was 85, and 9 months later, he's already 86. That is when Yishmael was born. Now, the Gemara in Yevamos says there's something halachically very significant here. This is actually a very significant halachic lesson. The halacha is, we know that the first mitzvah of the Torah is pruervu, be fruitful and multiply. Now, what if a person is married and doesn't have children, and let's assume we don't know the medical reason. So the halacha actually is, and we don't follow this today for various reasons, I'll get to that as well, that if you're married to a woman for 10 years, and you don't have children, and you don't know that it's, you know, your medical problem, so you have to do something. Either you divorce her, or you take another wife at a time when polygamy was permitted. And you gotta wait, in other words, so you gotta do it after 10, you know, 10 years. Now you give it 10 years, but that's 10 years, you gotta do something for a pruervu. But the Gemara says, if you make aliyah before the expiration of 10 years, meaning you go to Israel, the clock starts again, and you don't have to take action till another 10 years. And the reason is, because even if you weren't zocha to have children in Chutz La'aretz, the merit of Eretz Yisrael may kick in. So the clock gets restarted when you move to Eretz Yisrael. Proof of this is, Avraham was married to Sarah many years in Chutz La'aretz without children, but only after 10 years, but when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he waited 10 years before he took a concubine. Meaning to say that the clock starts again, otherwise he would have taken a concubine much earlier. Okay. So, again, Lech Lecha is 75, taking of Hagar is when Avram is 85, Yishmael is born 86, 99, when Yishmael is 13, Avraham is given the commandment of Bris Milah. Avraham and Sarah's name is changed. And then Sarah conceives and gives birth to Yitzchak when Avraham is 100 and Sarah is 90. So, therefore, according to our Messiah, Yishmael had a bris when he was 13 years old. Right? Yishmael was born when Avraham was 86. Avraham circumcised himself. Avram was his own moel. Avram did his own bris and circumcised Yishmael and the like. Now this has some very, very powerful repercussions. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, which is a medrash, it's a medrash from the Tanaim, tells us that the last most difficult gullus that the Jewish people will endure, the greatest persecution before Mashiach, will not be from Edom, not be from Rome, which is Western civilization. Right? The gullus of Edom is the gullus of Western civilization. It'll rather be the exile of Yishmael. Now Yishmael, of course, was not Muslim. I mean, Muhammad was not around until much, much later. But Yishmael is the ancestor of Arab nations. Right? The Arabs are Yishmael. They come from Yishmael. And Chazal say, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer says, that the gullus of Yishmael will be the most difficult gullus that Am Yisrael will ever face. Now this is amazingly prophetic, because in a sense we're not really in a gullus Yishmael in the narrow sense, meaning to say, if you ask yourself, where do Jews live? By and large, Jews don't live, I mean there are some, but large populations of Jews do not live under Arab or Muslim rule. Jews live in Western countries, whether it's the United States, Europe, even Israel is really classified as a Western country. So what does the Medrash mean when it says we will be subject to the gullus of Yishmael? It doesn't mean Jews will be living in those countries, but it means we will be dominated by them by virtue of the terror and the fear that they generate. And there's no question that the gullus of Yishmael, which is really the gullus of Arab and by extension Islamic culture, is a devastating gullus that has a stranglehold not only on the Jewish people, but a stranglehold on the whole world, whether it's oil, whether it's terrorism, whether it's Islamic fundamentalism. I don't know if any of you, well, some of you are from Europe, from England or the like. In Europe, in France, in Germany, and in United Kingdom or Great Britain, it is wreaking havoc. The influx of Muslims—I don't mean peaceful Muslims, but Muslims who are, you know, really terrorists—is literally destroying Europe. It is destroying Europe, and it's not so not so far that it's going to affect America as well. We, Rabbi Hussein Harabin, we live in fear here in Israel as well, maybe more so. You know, our neighbors across the street. This is the gullus of Yishmael. And the Medrash tells us, the gullus of Yishmael, again, I want to point out, historically, when the Medrash was written, Yishmael was a very insignificant Bedouin tribe that was, really had no power at all. And the Medrash was written at the height of the Roman Empire. And yet the Medrash knew that at the end of days, Yishmael will be the most dangerous enemy. And it says, Yishmael is the only nation in the world, besides Yisrael, that has God's name embedded in their identity. Aleph Lamed is Hashem's name. Yishmael, Yishmael, God will listen to their prayers, the power of prayer. And Yisrael, God will give us triumph and victory. And one of the reasons the Midrashim give for the power of Yishmael is that Yishmael has the merit of Bris Milah. That on some level, since when Hashem made a covenant with Abraham, that covenant did include Yishmael, because Yishmael was a partner to the Bris. And not only that, but the Medrash says that Yishmael tells Yitzchak, I'm better than you, because you had your bris at 8 days, you didn't make any decisions, and you didn't feel that much pain. I had a bris at 13. It does indeed hurt more when you're older, as it were. And we don't understand how these things work. I mean, you know, why should a bris help a Russia, whatever it would be? But the Midrashim do point out that the zechus of Bris Milah continues to this very day to be a merit for Yishmael against us, which suggests that Yishmael cannot be defeated in a physical way, because their power is a spiritual power. You know, I don't know if you guys might remember, maybe your parents remember, when there used to be cameras with film. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they used to exist. I remember it. And there used to be something called photographic negatives. Right, you'd have to develop a negative, and right, the people don't do that today. And from the negative, you can reconstruct the positive. There is an idea, which is a very mystical idea, and I do not understand it myself, but I will say it, that just like a physicist says there is matter and there is antimatter, and there's a photograph and a photographic negative, there is something called dark spiritual energy. Meaning there can be a spiritual power that is not just physical brutality. It is a spiritual power, but it's demonic. In the language of Kabbalah, it comes from the Sitra Achra. It comes from the other side. But it is a spiritual power. It's not just physical. And in that sense, Yishmael is said to have, because of the zechus of Bris Milah, they have a certain dark spiritual energy that makes them a more powerful adversary than Edom. Esav is pure brute force. Now that can be very devastating. Obviously it's devastating, but ultimately spirituality will vanquish brute force. So the Holocaust, I mean, listen, obviously the Holocaust was devastating and tragic. But ultimately it does get vanquished. Ultimately it gets vanquished, because it just represents godlessness and brutality. Yishmael is a more difficult adversary to encapsulate, to get to wrap your head around, because Yishmael represents commitment to God in a perverse way. It represents commitment to a religious idea. And as a result, they tap into spiritual energy that makes them much more difficult to vanquish unless we intensify our own spirituality. Now, you understand that this is not just abstract thinking. This is why this type of enemy is really almost immune to conventional military. I mean, that's the way, that's the nature of terrorism. You have your police, you have your army. So what? Who's going to stop anybody from stabbing you when you walk into the street or whatever it is? I mean, these things are unpredictable. They're not containable. You can't stop them. They're without warning. Even the fear of getting killed, which is was a big deterrent even for Nazis. You know, Nazis at the end of World War II were willing to make deals to save Jews. Why? Out of sheer cowardice. They knew the Allies were winning the war. And they figured, oh yeah, I'm going to make myself a nice guy so they're not going to think I killed Jews. Which means to say, with all of Hitler's grandiose ideology that Nazis absorbed, when it came, okay, Hitler himself committed suicide, but when it came to the average SS guy, his own life was more valuable to him than his ideology. He was willing to save a Jew if it would save his life. Meaning he was acting out of parochial self-interest. But when you have a fanaticism that says, I don't mind if I die, I don't mind if I get blown up, I don't care if I get killed, and in fact that's even good because I will, you know, I will have whatever I have up there in the world to come. So the conventional ways of defeating an enemy don't work. You see, Yishmael can only be defeated spiritually, not physically. And that comes from the Zuchus of Bris Milah. So that's a very, very important idea. That this is the most dangerous enemy of all, and it's the most difficult enemy to defeat. Yeah.
I heard that Yishmael did tshuva.
Yep.
Could that be a tshuva as well?
Yes, that is true as well. We're going to read that after Sarah died, Avram took a new wife, and that new wife is called Keturah. But according to so if you read the Chumash, she's just another wife. But if you look at Rashi, Rashi says she really was not another wife. This was a woman he had been married to before, and that was Hagar. And Hagar herself became righteous, and Keturah is Keturah. She became like incense. And you're also correct that Hagar did tshuva, but more importantly for our purposes, Yishmael did tshuva. Yishmael did tshuva. In fact, the Meshech Chacham actually says a fascinating thing. He says that the Bnei Yishmael are the only other nation besides the Jewish people that embraced strict monotheism, meaning to say other nations are Christian, which has elements of paganism and idolatry, or Buddhists or Hindus, all of which are kind of idolatrous. The only purely monotheistic religion in the world, other than Judaism, is Islam. Hate to say it, but that's true. Islam is, in terms of their belief in God, it's exactly our belief in God. I mean, obviously there are a million differences, but you know, God is not a body, God is eternal, etc. Islam is pure monotheism. And the Meshech Chachma says, this was the merit, since Yishmael did tshuva, he was zocher that only his descendants would find the path to Hashem, free of any taint of idolatry or paganism. Yeah.
This is all written before Islam was created in 600.
Correct. I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that for sure. This gets into a little bit of a historical problem. I mean, Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer is a medrash that is supposed to be written by Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus. Now, if it is written by Eliezer ben Horkanus, it would date to the first century, 500 years before Islam. However, in truth, I do want to tell you that there are scholars that record it as a later medrash, and it could have been at the very beginning of Islam. So I don't want to say it for sure, but at least our traditional dating of the medrash would make it before Islam. That's right. But the Meshech Chachma wrote it in the 19th century. You know, he just wrote that the monotheistic nature of Bnei Yishmael is a consequence of Yishmael doing tshuva, and that makes them very, very dangerous. So this is really a difficult time, but the one thing you have to understand is, what does a person feel when they're confronted with an enemy that they really can't do anything about? You know, police aren't really going to help, soldiers aren't going to help, just can't do anything about it, because they could just explode any moment, no matter what. So there was a famous experiment in psychology years and years ago, trying to measure how do organisms respond when they're in a hopeless situation. So they wanted to do an animal experimentation. They put rats in a tub of water, and the water was filling up, and the rats were unable to escape, and they're clawing and the like. And basically, they discovered that after a while, the rats would just die even before they drowned. That the panic and the hopelessness literally shut down their systems. Okay, again, it's not, I'm not saying halacha, you should do those types of experiments even on animals. But they were trying to show how hopelessness can literally destroy you even before you drowned, even before anything happened. You just give up. So a person might have the attitude, being confronted with an enemy, that there's nothing you can do, you just become hopeless. But I've said before the story of the Brisker Rav, a very, very good story. The Brisker Rav, Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, who was the son of Rav Chaim of Brisk, was trapped in the Warsaw Ghetto during World War II, and Baruch Hashem, eventually he was smuggled out, and he came to Eretz Yisrael, but he lost. He did lose, his wife was killed, and he had some children that were killed as well, so he did suffer these tragedies as well. Now the Brisker Rav, how do I say this in a nice way? He would often be described as a bit tense, because the Brisker Rav was always worried about mitzvos, meaning if he said Kriya Shema, he would be thinking, was I Yotze, was I not Yotze? In other words, he was very worried about mitzvos. He was nervous as a result. But in the Warsaw Ghetto, where people were dropping dead and people were starving and there was disease and there was murder, he was very calm. He went around his daily schedule, he learned, he davened, he gave shiurim. So one of his talmidim had the chutzpah, be a lot of chutzpah, asking the Brisker Rav, you know, Rebbe, kind of, you know, you're always so uptight, you know, how come, you know, this is a reason to be nervous, you know, how come you're so calm? How do you do it? I'm sure they asked it in a more kavadika way. So listen to what the Brisker Rav said. The Brisker Rav said, you know, the reason I'm nervous about mitzvos is mitzvos are my responsibility. Everything is in the hands of heaven except to fear heaven. So when it's my responsibility, did I take lulav, did I eat matzah, did I blow shofar, did I daven? I am worried. Yeah, I make mistakes, I'm fallible, I'm weak, maybe I didn't do it right. Yeah, I do worry about that. But he said, what if you're in a situation in which you are so helpless that there is nothing you can do at all? Some people will be like the rats. Hopelessness will just kill them. He said, I'm the opposite. When I know it's not up to me, then I know God is in charge, because there's nothing else that can help us. When God is in charge, I don't worry. Now, he wasn't being Pollyannish. He wasn't saying everything is going to have a great happy ending. I mean, he lost his wife, he lost a child. But he said, as difficult as it is, when God is in charge, whether I understand it or not, there will be a Gam Zula Tova involved. So he said, it is precisely when there's nothing we can do at all that I have the greatest calmness. Because then I say to Hashem, Eibishter, I've done all I can do. There's nothing I can do. You got to take over. You see, when it comes to a mitzvah, Hashem doesn't take over, because it's your job, our job to do it. Rav Cheskel Avramsky said the same thing. Rav Cheskel Avramsky was a great gadol, also a Talmud of Rav Chaim. He was kind of a very good friend of the Brisker Rav. Rav Cheskel Avramsky was not a healthy person, and in the 1920s in Stalinist Russia, he was sentenced for teaching Torah, and he was banished to Siberia. And the state of his health would be such that he would almost certainly die in a Siberian winter. He was not very healthy. So he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, you know, it's true that you gave us a mitzvah to guard our health. And if there are things I could do and I didn't do and I suffer because of them, that's my fault. But he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, there's nothing I can do here. I'm in Siberia. What can I do? And if there's nothing I can do, he said to Hashem, you have to be in charge. And Baruch Hashem, he lived through Siberia. He came to Eretz Yisrael. He became a great, great Rosh Hashiva here, one of the Gedolei Hador and the like. In fact, I will tell you, my memory is very vague, but I have a memory as a ninth grader, that Rabbi Cheskel Avramsky was Nifter. And the whole yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael in Baltimore, we all got together. The yeshiva was going to be masbid. It was Yiddish. I didn't understand what was going on. But, you know, everybody's sitting. And the Rosh Yeshiva who knew Rabbi Cheskel Avramsky, Rabbi Bruderman, was giving a hesped. And then all of a sudden, I've never seen this before, and I never saw it since. All of a sudden, he told everybody to sit on the ground. Did you ever see that? Did you ever see that in hesped here? Sit on the ground. He told us, get off our chairs, sit on the ground, as an expression of avelus. Very, very striking, very, very moving. But I remember that he told us to do that for Rabbi Cheskel Avramsky. Okay, all right, you all be well, and Bezus Hashem, so keep in mind, therefore, that, you know, there's a lot of discussion about drafting yeshiva students, so if you're not in Olah, you don't have to worry about it, but, you know, we're worried, everybody's worried about it. But keep in mind that based on what we said, if the enemy is Yishmael, then these soldiers are going to be the people who learn Torah. That's Badafka. You are in the army. You are drafted. You are serving. And you are promoting not just the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. You are the national security of Eretz Yisrael. We, of course, are grateful to the soldiers because we live in a world where we need the physical aspect as well. And one always has to be grateful. One has to have great Hakaras HaTov. And one does not have Hakaras HaTov to the Chayolim. That is a pagam in one's midos, a very serious pagam. But at the same time, you should not at all feel that you're shirking your duty, because it is a real solid truth that especially against Bnei Yishmael, it is only the koach of Torah that is going to defeat them. Political and military strategies are going to be ineffective because Yishmael's koach is the koach of Bris Mila, which is a spiritual koach. Okay, see you.